Welcome to Your Family Dog, a podcast dedicated to helping families love living with dogs. Here are your hosts, Julie Fudge-Smith and Colleen Pilar.
Hi, I'm Colleen Pilar. Welcome to Your Family Dog. Today I'm joined with Julie Fudge-Smith, as always, but we also have a special guest, Dr. Alicia Karas from the faculty at Tufts University Cummings School of Veterinary Medicine. So thanks so much for joining us, Dr. Karas. I understand your specialty is pain management and supporting older and medically frail dogs. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. I started out as an anesthesiologist. My training is in how to anesthetize patients, and then I got very interested in how to treat pain. And then I started to realize that surgical pain was not the only thing we needed to worry about, and I started to look at pain in dogs and cats in particular. And our patients are living longer and longer, and so we need to really worry about pain. And then I've also become interested in a lot of sort of issues for older animals, including quality of life, welfare, and cognitive dysfunction.
Mm-hmm. Can you give our audience an idea of what vets or what you consider to be a geriatric dog? I think sometimes that we're in denial about when our dogs are actually starting to become senior animals. And does it depend on the breed or the size of the dog?
It does. Our best guesses have to do with the size of the dog. And everybody kind of gets the idea that a Great Dane doesn't live as long as a Chihuahua. And so a Chihuahua might live to be 18 and might not be considered to be geriatric until maybe 12, whereas a Great Dane might be considered to be geriatric starting at 7 or 8. But again, dogs live longer and longer with all the things that we're doing for good health. So, they're living longer as elderly dogs, all of them.
Okay. So if you had like a Labrador Retriever or Golden Retriever or sort of the medium sized dog, would you consider 6-7 to be the point you need to start thinking about your dog as perhaps being geriatric, or is that a little too early?
That's probably a little early. I happen to have a few Labradors myself, and I think they don't stop really being puppies till 5.
Yes. Yes, I have a flat coat, and he's just like, she's like that too. I think that they are puppies until their dying day.
Yeah. Yeah, so we start to see changes in their brains at somewhere between 7 and 9 years of age, probably. So, you know, if we actually looked at them on MRI. So I would say I start to think about my dog being geriatric, my Labrador being geriatric at about 9.
Okay, good. That's good to know. What are some of the common problems that older dogs may be facing that owners may not be aware of, or that perhaps our dogs are showing us early signs of some of these problems that people may not recognize those symptoms?
I have a list here that I made because they are things that I commonly talk about with dog guardians, whatever we want to call them. The problems with aging start to catch up with you. You might start to have a little bit of muscle loss. And that's something that happens in older people and any animal with old age. And so then you don't have the strength. And they also are probably not necessarily getting out, getting as much exercise. And eventually they kind of become frail.
Okay.
When they're quite old.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I think is that we from a stimulus point of view, from a welfare point of view, we probably spend a lot of time with our younger dogs doing things like walking, running, going to the dog park, you know, those of us who are kind of crazy do, you know, training and play dates and things like that. And as dogs get older, they are quieter and they sort of slip into the background. And so we probably don't watch them quite as closely as we used to.
Yeah.
And so we might not know some things.
Julie has a phrase that she says, doggy ambiance. Like, when people talk about what they want from a dog, they almost just want the dog around in the background. And as they do get older, they sort of fall into that category. And it is very easy to just have the dog on the couch or the dog in the room or the dog, but you're not actively paying attention and actively channeling that dog's brain and body. And it stuff creeps up then. You don't really notice as gradual changes.
So what are some of the more subtle signs that people may miss that would be something that if they could pay attention to, they could make their elderly dog a little bit more comfortable? Like, what are some of the more subtle signs, perhaps, of pain or cognitive dysfunction that people might not be recognizing, but if they did, they could do something to really help their dog out?
Well, let's say the dog is probably going to compensate and be fairly normal and appear fairly normal unless you're watching carefully. So, you know, they're slipping more when they're getting up on slippery floors. We all have our nice hardwood floors now. I'm about to like put down cheap carpet because it's, you know, it's a problem because slipping causes injury.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still getting on and off the couch, but it's a little harder. They're getting on and off the bed, but it's a little harder. And so the combination of things together might cause them to become injured, muscle injured.
I was just going to say, so if you're noticing that your dog hesitates, perhaps, either getting onto the couch or off of the couch, then that might be a time to think about putting an ottoman there or some steps onto the bed or the couch so that the dog can get up more easily. And if we're slipping on hardwood floors, maybe some rubber-backed mats would be a good thing to put down in areas where your dog is more likely to slip. So noticing those little things, those hesitations that your dogs have, might be a clue that we need a little bit of assistance.
Yeah, I usually say that's when your house gets real ugly. If I wrote a book one day, I would probably count all the people that I knew who had put their mattress on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And their dog's old, so they can still get in bed with them. And I just think that's beautiful.
It is.
It is. So cognitively, what would we be looking for in dogs that are starting to develop some cognition difficulties?
One of the main things I think that's a problem with early cognitive dysfunction in dogs is anxiety. And the anxiety is because you just can't quite work stuff out. It's just not as crystal clear, I think, for them. If you've ever had a situation where you were really stressed and you felt confused, even if your dog's, people say, oh, my dog still has a sense of humor and he still knows where his food is and he knows where the bedroom is and everything, but we'll see more anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And that can translate into the cardinal sign that I see, that I hear from people about, which is the beginning of restlessness at night.
Okay.
Pacing, panting, sometimes whining. And that's important to recognize because a lot of people think that's due to pain, but it's usually due to some change in the way that they perceive the daily signals of daylight and nighttime.
Is there anything you can do for that? If a dog is developing anxiety due to these cognitive disorders or this beginning of a canine cognitive dysfunction, do regular anti-anxiety medications help a dog in this state, or is there something else we need to be thinking of?
There's a range of solutions that I use, and they're not actually prescription medications because we have to be careful about. There's a lot of prescription medications that have anticholinergic effects, sort of like Benadryl, and we have to be careful about those because they can worsen cognitive function.
Oh,
so. There's a lot of things that are, you know, now very commonly used, like L-theanine, Composure.
I use those right now with my 2-year-old dog who is having an interesting time getting used to my grandchildren being around. So it's been very helpful to her.
The other solution is to try to think about what is stressful to your dogs. And I know you guys know what I'm talking about. This is when going to the groomer and going to the dog park and being boarded are st- start to be way more difficult because they just don't have their bearings about them.
Right.
So, you know, I have clients sometimes say, "Oh, my dog doesn't seem to really enjoy the dog park anymore." And I heard you guys say, you know, they're not enjoying it, then they shouldn't be there. So,
right. But you have to really be able to read your dog to know that. And that's a tough thing sometimes, especially when they always have enjoyed it. And then as they start to, and they're just moving around the dog park or wherever, moving around at the daycare or the boarding facility. And they're like, well, it's not as much fun as it used to be, but he's still like, no, he's just trying to avoid it all. It's a tough, tough spot.
It is a tough spot. And of course, it goes back to something Colleen and I talk about, oh, I don't know, pretty much every episode, which is stress signals, learning to recognize, you know, and refreshing yourself with, what is it that my dog is telling me? Or what is his body language and his facial expressions? And what is he doing that may be indicating to me that he's not comfortable in the situation anymore? So I think it's really important to sort of reacquaint yourself with stress signals so that you understand what your dog is telling you. Because the sooner you can recognize that, the sooner you can make it easier for your dog. One of the things I was thinking too, Dr. Karas, is if your dog is having problems with some cognitive stuff, what are some of the things you can do around the house that may make it easier for your dog to cope with his environment?
Many people, when their dog starts to be restless at night, many people get up and turn the light on. And in a sense that pretty much in two sessions, you guys would agree, conditions your dog to know that he's worked it out very well for himself. So he's trained you to get up. And that can be the start of a long time thing. And so talking to your veterinarian about strategies for promoting sleep, things like melatonin and stuff like that are useful. Not, it's hard because when our dogs are old, we worry very, very much about them. And so we're up when they're up and they know when our breathing patterns changed and they've got us up and it's comforting to them, but you have to be, you know, it's actually a challenge because you need to sleep.
Right.
Other things are to, you know, try not to make, you know, so if they're stressful things, you're going to have a big party, you're going to have a wedding, you're going to have a picnic or whatever, your dog might be better off in a comfortable bedroom somewhere, and not exposed to a whole lot of stressful things. And the other thing that happens is they will sometimes start house soiling. And so it's important to rule out, you know, to make sure that they don't have, you know, a urinary tract infection or stones or something, you know, kidney failure or something that's bad. So you do want to get that checked. And they do get, they can get a lot of urinary tract infections because they leak urine as they get older. But if they're actually having accidents, as if they've forgotten where to go, that may be due to their cognitive dysfunction. And so getting them out more often, getting them not, you know, punishing them, working on strategies to try to, you know, help them with that is good.
I think pain can be tricky. That sometimes with a client, I'll say, I think your dog seems uncomfortable, but I occasionally have trouble articulating what it is I'm seeing. And then they start watching and we discuss and whatever it is that we get some words and they go to the vet and they come back and they go, wow, oh, my dog is so much better. My vet said, you know, it was a knee issue or a hip issue or a spinal alignment or whatever. And now we're working on that and helping with it. What are the things people should be looking for if a dog isn't, you know, if a dog isn't yelping, doesn't mean he's not in pain. How do we know?
I know, isn't that funny? That's the first thing that people say to me, that they say, I don't think my dog's painful. He's not crying or yelping or anything. And in fact, they seldom cry or yelp unless something is being done to them, like, you know, nail trim or something like that, where you're really tweaking them. Mostly I would say that they will curtail their activities. So you'll go on a walk, they may sit down, they may be in a hurry to get home, they may be more stiff after usual exercise. And the thing that pain does is it inhibits us from doing our normal activities. So your dog may not get up and come to the kitchen every time you go in the kitchen and open the fridge. your dog may not follow you around the house as much. The other thing that I do is I tell people that almost every dog, when they wake up in the morning, does some form of a bowel stretch, which is like down dog.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll usually walk forward and stretch out their low back and their hind legs. And then they'll almost invariably do what I call a full body shake, so nose to tail. And all of that is very normal. If we did it, we would be in much better shape.
My yoga teacher says I should do it each morning. I just don't. Yeah.
The full body shake is a little tricky. I haven't really been able to do that one. But you can watch that full body shake. And if it is literally nose to tail. And if they stop shaking at some point in their body, then something is painful.
That's great advice. That's something that owners can clearly see. That's one of the things that, you know, we ask them to look for subtle signs, and they're like, I can't. But that's something very specific that they can look at and go, oh, okay, I see. And you stopped right in the middle. Boy, is there something going on in the middle of your back that maybe we need to take care of?
Yeah, that's a very good tip.
Great tip. Thank you for that one. Do you find that older dogs benefit from things like massage or chiropractic? Acupuncture, are those good relievers, stress relievers for older dogs?
So this is a hot topic. I think this would be the third time I've been interviewed about this in the last month. I think that the best conditioning for your dog, if your dog can handle it, is regular walking without pulling on a collar. And because I don't like, you know, I don't like pulling on the neck. I don't think anybody wants to have their neck pulled on. I think that grooming your own dog with something like a Zoom Groom, which is a soft rubber brush kind of thing.
Link to that in the notes for people who don't
know.
Yeah, good idea.
That's a great one because just really, really gentle circles with the Zoom Groom increases the circulation to the skin. And a lot of dogs, when they get old, have chronic pain, and brushing with the usual grooming things can become painful.
Okay.
I do send dogs for, say, chiropractic adjustment or recommend acupuncture for them, but usually only if there is a problem. I don't do it necessarily. Chiropractic is not a bad idea as long as you're – chiropractor is really careful about situations where dogs should not be adjusted. If I had the time, I'd go to my chiropractor once a month. The main thing that I tell people, and of course, rehab, all these canine rehabilitation places are really kind of cool too, and they may have some sort of, you know, maintenance programs. It's lovely. The dogs rush in there and they lie down on the mat for their massage, and so they clearly like it. And I tell people, if your dog pulls to get into the rehab place or the massage place, then that's good. If your dog does not want to go in there, then your dog regards that as
adversive. Right. Well, once again, it's learning to read your dog and understanding that he's clearly telling you what is good and what is not good for him. And in situations like massage or chiropractic or whatever, I think that's a really good guide. He may balk going to the vets, but sometimes that just has to happen. So, he's like, I'm choosing not to have shots this year, Mom. No, that's, you know, whatever, that's might not be an option.
Well, I think pain is a really tricky topic. And so I think it's interesting that you got into it through, you know, post-surgical pain, but then realizing it's a much bigger thing because we've all had the experience where something happens and someone says, well, that didn't hurt you. And you go, no, actually it did. So just because, you know, the person performing the massage believes this doesn't hurt, the person receiving it or the dog receiving it might have a different experience. And so I think we do have to sort of trust the dog's opinion on whether or not that was helpful to us, because it's very easy to defer to the people around us who are saying this is good for them. He needs it. It's helpful. Which if it's helping, then it's helpful. And if it's hurting, then it's not.
Right.
Good point. Good point. One other question I had is, are there any tests that you think should be run regularly for older dogs? And how often should your geriatric dog be at the vet? Should we be going twice a year when we reach geriatric stages? Or is once a year for your annual physical still okay?
Well, I am not a general practitioner, and I don't have a lot of those skills anymore, but I do think that if you have a good relationship with your vet, having your dog be seen twice a year is a great idea, because they will pick, the vet will pick, and the technicians will pick up things that you may not see. So they may notice that, you know, that the teeth have become a problem. They may notice staining, urine staining and leaking of urine. And I think that at least once a year, the older dog really should have a full chemistry and probably a thyroid level checked and maybe a CBC. You know, you don't normally want to do blood tests unless there's something wrong. But if you start to see that dogs have chronic kidney disease, and or, you know, they have a urinalysis and they have bacteria in their urine, then you need to do something about it before it gets serious.
Right. Well, I also think, too, sometimes it's good to get a baseline, have a full blood test gone, get your baseline on your dog when you know he's healthy, so that subsequently you can you have something to compare it to, so you know where you're starting from. So I usually have a baseline done on my dogs on a fairly, well, I'm trying to think when I do, but, you know, when I feel like it's a good time to do it, we will have a baseline. And you're absolutely right about vet techs. Our Bernese Mountain Dog last year, I was actually going to take my flat coat in to have some blood tests run because he was on Tramadol. And but he had actually had them done a few weeks. So I thought, well, let's take the burner in because he's looking funny. The vet took one look at his gums and said, he is anemic and you need to get him to the hospital. And if she hadn't seen that, he probably would have died that weekend. So the vet text, the one who picked up on it right away, and the vet called me and said, you need to get him to MedVet. And I did. And we were able to, he ended up having cancer. We were able to keep him for another 3 months, but we would have lost him that weekend without a good vet tech. So when you said that, I thought, yes, they can pick up on things that I was just not seeing. So
it's not so much the tests, but really just, you know, the skilled eye of the clinician or the technician that can help.
Absolutely.
So the reason I found you was because I had been given a copy of your Comfort Diary for Dogs, which is just a one-page sheet that I think is genius. So I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about how you developed it and the things that the Comfort Diary covers.
I really developed it because there are the types of patients that come to see me, the types of people who bring their dogs to see me. There's a lot of situations where they feel like the dog is in terrible shape, that their quality of life is poor, and so they'll come in and they will be very upset, and I will say, let's talk about your dog's quality of life, what's his day like, you know, what sort of things do you notice, and we'll go through those things, and some of them will realize, oh, you know, my dog's quality of life is actually pretty good. It's on a scale of 0 to 10, it's like an 8. And because the dog is limping, because the dog has some trouble getting around and things like that, I think that older animals, just like older people, can have a wonderful quality of life. Mm-hmm. There are other times when people don't know whether it's time we're going to load up on a bunch of medications because the dog is in pretty tough shape. Sometimes they're cancer patients. Sometimes they just have really old and have some organ dysfunction and just not working very well. And I will use the Comfort Diary. I initially called it a pain diary, but, you know, it's really more about assuring comfort. And so I'll give that to people, and it's a very wonderful thing, especially when we're making transitions with medications, when we're concern the quality of life is poor, because people can see it graphically. They can actually see that things are declining or things are improving. Mm-hmm. And they will write down, because people are very, very poor at telling me what medications their dogs are on at any one time. They're supposed to write down what meds their dog is on so that I can see, oh, when we added this med, things got better.
Very good.
The other thing people will do is, you know, as we'll talk about, when people are uncertain about whether their dog's quality of life is at all okay, they'll turn that piece of paper over and they'll just write things, which are mm-hmm. sometimes quite instructive for them. Mm-hmm. So they'll begin to see that it's not, we're not having more good days than bad. So right. it's because when I was in veterinary school, we had a pony who recovered from surgery, and we couldn't tell if he was recovering, we got a consult, and they said, write down how he's doing every day. And when we wrote that down, we could see he was actually improving. So it's very important for trends.
Yeah. I love that it's so simple to fill out, and I mean, just quick and easy, but really covers the breadth of how the dog is moving and emotionally and physically kind of throughout the day. So I love this tool, and I really appreciate that you're willing to let us share that with people, because I have started using it in my own house for my dog, who's probably a minimum of 12. You know, that's our best guess. I think it's a really nice tool.
I do, too. And I think that we've done a good job of pretty much covering things to look for in elder care for dogs. I think one of the things, just for a quick summary, is that and the comfort diary, it seems to me, is going to help you begin to recognize those more subtle signals in your dog as you're paying close attention, recording these things, so that you begin to recognize, once again, those stress signals that are indicating to you that your dog is uncomfortable with something. So we've talked about pain management and making sure that you see your vet on a regular basis, because they may be able to pick up on things and help you with various medications or other supplements that might help your elder dog be more comfortable. We've also talked about some cognitive things to look for muscle loss. One way to tell if your dog is not comfortable as he used to be is that full body shake in the morning. Where is it? How's that going? And is he still doing it nose to tail? Colleen, you got any other thoughts on what we may have covered today that I forgot?
No, I think those are all really good tips for supporting our older dogs and making sure they have comfortable, happy lives here.
Yes.
So they can have their good quality of life in their old age, in their retirement.
In their retirement. Dr. Karras, is there anything else you'd like to add about the elder dog that we haven't touched on today?
I would say that the one thing that seems to derail older dogs with pain is that the son comes home, or the daughter comes home from college, or somebody decides they're going to pay attention to the dog, and they take the dog in the backyard and throw the tennis ball 40 times. And the next day the dog can't walk. And what nobody realizes, that's what I call weekend warrior syndrome.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't do that without expecting to be really sore. So you're keeping activity constant. You're keeping nails short. And I know that's a tough one. Long nails torture dogs, make it very difficult to get around. And I think the main thing is to just reassess, you know, how your dog is seeing the world, and honor that. So you might not be able to go to the groomer. They might not be able to stay all day at the groomer. Maybe you can get somebody to come to the house. Maybe you can get somebody to stay over with your dog when you're away. Things like that. Just think about how your dog is changing. And realize, as much as you don't like it, your dog is getting older faster than you.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's an unfortunate reality. So, well, thank you very much, Dr. Karras, for coming on with us today, and we certainly appreciate all this information on elder dogs, and we'll certainly give a link to your comfort diary, as well as some of the other things that you had mentioned to us, and I think that does it for this episode, and Colleen, we'll see you, and Dr. Karras, I think you're going to join us for our next episode as well, when we talk about when is the time to say goodbye, when is it the time that we need to think about helping our dogs move on to the next phase of their existence, so to speak. So,
I'll go grab Kleenex to prepare.
Yes, we should put a Kleenex alert at the front of that one. All right. Well, thank you very much, and we'll see you next time.
Yeah. Great.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Your Family Dog. Got questions? Interesting ideas? Colleen and Julie would love to hear them. Call 614-349-1661. Or visit www.yourfamilydogpodcast.com to share your thoughts.